August the 20th, 1940. Coyoacan, Mexico City. Two men enter this house. The older sits down at this desk to read. Suddenly, his trusted companion pulls out a vicious-looking ice pick and buries it in his skull. For more than 10 years, one of the world's most notorious revolutionaries has been on the run. Now, an assassin has caught up with him. October 1920, Moscow. Leon Trotsky's finest hour, driving his men on to defeat the enemies who had seemed about to crush the infant Soviet regime. The second most powerful man in the new Soviet Union, he is the obvious successor to an exhausted Vladimir Ilyich Lenin. But even now he is a marked man. The colleague who will one day hound him to death is already planning his first move. Leon Trotsky is born in 1889 as Lev Davidovich Bronstein, son of a wealthy Jewish farmer in the Ukraine. While at high school in Nikolaev, he gets involved in revolutionary anti-Tsarist activities and becomes a Marxist. In January 1898, the 19-year-old Bronstein is arrested and spends 2 years in the St. Peter and Paul fortress in St. Petersburg, awaiting trial. While in prison, he marries Alexandra Sololovska, a fellow Marxist, and in 1900, both are exiled to Siberia. There, Bronstein is impressed by articles by an exiled Marxist, Vladimir Lenin, in the London-based Marxist newspaper, Iskra. And when in 1902 he escapes using a false passport under the name of Leon Trotsky, he heads for the British capital. Once there, he joins other Marxist exiles. Initially, Trotsky, as he now calls himself, supports the Menshevik faction, who want a broad-based socialist revolution against the minority Bolsheviks, led by Vladimir Lenin, who want an elite group to lead a working-class revolution. In 1905, Russia plunges into turmoil after a disastrous defeat in a war against Japan. January the 22nd, 1905. On Bloody Sunday, Tsarist troops massacre several hundred peaceful protesters as they march on the Winter Palace. Believing that revolution is near, Trotsky returns secretly to his homeland. By December, he has been arrested again, but again escapes in January 1907 while on the way back to Siberia. This time he settles in Vienna and founds a newspaper, Pravda, or Truth. When World War I breaks out, Trotsky flees from Vienna to France. Deported to Spain in 1916 for anti-war activities, he is then moved on again to the United States. As the war which will make Trotsky a world-famous figure breaks out, the man who will one day be the instrument of his death is born in Barcelona. He is the son of a wealthy father, but a mother who is an ardent communist. They soon part, and Ramon Mercada is brought up by her in France. In February 1917, military disaster and economic collapse lead to the overthrow of the Tsarist regime and the establishment of a provisional social democratic government led by Alexander Kerensky. Again convinced that the hour of revolution has come, Trotsky returns to Russia as quickly as possible. Among the other Marxists who also return are Lenin, who has been living in neutral Switzerland, and the man who is to be Trotsky's nemesis, the Georgian Joseph Stalin, who has been in internal exile in Siberia. By October, Trotsky has been elected chairman of the Petrograd Soviet of Workers and joins Lenin in planning a coup to overthrow the provisional government. November the 7th, 1917, Petrograd, Russia. The storming of the Winter Palace marks the beginning of Soviet rule. Trotsky then becomes the effective number two to Lenin as the Bolsheviks tighten their grip on government. Joseph Stalin plays a much smaller part in the seizure of power. At this stage, he's seen as a hard worker, but not a future leader. In December, Felix Dzerzhinsky founds the Cheka secret police. Trotsky becomes People's Commissar for Foreign Affairs and leads the Soviet team during peace negotiations with the Germans at Brest-Litovsk. When these break down, the Germans renew their offensive and then impose a punitive treaty which removes the whole of the Ukraine from Soviet control. Trotsky resigns as Commissar for Foreign Affairs, but takes control of the armed forces. On August the 30th, 1918, Lenin is shot and seriously wounded by Fanny Kaplan. At the suggestion of Joseph Stalin, the Cheka begins a red terror to root out opposition. The following year, the Communist International, or Comintern, is formed to promote the spread of communism around the world. By now, forces loyal to the former Tsar have begun to take control of large parts of Russia, backed by its former allies, Britain, France, and the United States. For the next 2 years, civil war rages. Trotsky takes the lead in organizing a Red Army and defeating the pro-Tsarist White Armies. Allied with Dzerzhinsky, he uses increasingly savage measures to save the Bolshevik regime and begins a feud with Joseph Stalin, who has become the leading commissar in southern Russia. With the defeat of the last White Russian forces in late 1920, Trotsky is put in charge of rebuilding the Soviet transportation system. He disagrees with Lenin over the need to build socialism in one country before trying to foment communist revolutions in other countries. Stalin uses this opportunity to undermine Trotsky's position as Lenin's likely successor. In March 1921, Trotsky supervises the suppression of a mutiny at the naval base at Kronstadt. It is the last major rising against the Bolshevik government. But the devastation caused by the civil war means that the Soviet Union is now facing widespread famine. In desperation, Lenin introduces a new economic policy allowing limited private ownership in an attempt to rally the peasants and landowners and increase food production. Trotsky is frequently away from Moscow, supervising the vital rebuilding of the railway system. He fails to appreciate the steady rise of his arch enemy Stalin, who, in April 1922, becomes General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Communist Party, the spider at the center of the web of Soviet state control. Thus, when on May 26, 1922, Lenin suffers the first of a series of strokes, which leave him increasingly sidelined, Stalin is in prime position to start edging Trotsky out. He forms an alliance with Grigory Zinoviev and Lev Kamenev. And when, on March the 10th, 1923, Lenin's third stroke effectively removes him from power, this troika effectively controls the government and party apparatus. Trotsky, however, is still in control of the armed forces, so the situation is evenly balanced. January the 21st, 1924, Moscow. When Lenin dies, Trotsky is far away in the Caucasus. He misses the funeral because Stalin tells him an incorrect date. For the rest of the year, Trotsky remains the most prominent and popular Bolshevik leader, but he is becoming increasingly isolated. Stalin has adopted Lenin's belief that the regime must concentrate on building socialism in one country, and this gives him an ideological base from which to attack Trotsky's desire for permanent revolution internationally. By January 1925, Trotsky has been forced to resign as Commissar for War. He is given a series of ever more unimportant jobs and is increasingly seen as the leader of opposition to Stalin. Then, in October 1926, Trotsky loses his seat on the Politburo, the core of the Soviet government. Stalin starts using the secret police, now called the NKVD, against his opponents, but still does not dare strike directly at Trotsky. A year later, Stalin makes his move. Trotsky and Zinoviev are expelled from the Central Committee, and then on November the 12th, 1927, from the Communist Party altogether. Barely 3 months later, in January 1928, Trotsky is exiled to Alma-Ata in Kazakhstan with his wife Natalia Sedova and son Leon Sedov. Stalin now adopts much more extreme policies. The first five-year plan for rapid industrialization, the compulsory collectivization of agriculture, and forcible dispossession of major landowners, the kulaks. By February 1929, he's feeling secure enough to have Trotsky deported from the Soviet Union to Turkey. He settles near Istanbul and begins to write and speak out against Stalin, helped by Natalia and Leon Sedov. Soon Stalin realizes that letting his greatest critic go abroad and become a focus for communists opposed to his rule has been a mistake. He begins trying to infiltrate Trotsky's immediate entourage. In 1933, Trotsky is offered asylum in France by the socialist government of Edouard Daladier. In that same year, the pressure on Stalin's regime increases when the virulently anti-Bolshevik Adolf Hitler becomes Chancellor of Germany. He makes no secret of his determination to rebuild the military power of Russia's former enemy. During 1935, a change of government in France obliges Trotsky to move to Norway. In the same year, Ramon Mercader emerges from obscurity when he is arrested in Barcelona and accused of setting up a communist cell. He is released in 1936 when the Popular Front wins a democratic election. Meanwhile, the threat to Trotsky's life is becoming more direct. In Moscow, Stalin begins mass purges and show trials of his most prominent enemies. Trotsky is tried in absentia as a traitor alongside Kamenev and Zinoviev and condemned to death. They are both executed and a price put on Trotsky's head. While Stalin's great terror is convulsing Moscow, civil war begins in Spain. General Francisco Franco begins a revolt against the democratically elected government. The civil war intensifies as Hitler and Mussolini send weapons and troops to help Franco. In response, the Republican government appeals first to France and Britain, and after they reject it, to the Soviet Union. Weapons and advisers are sent by Stalin. Mercader is among the thousands who flock to support the Republican cause. And through his communist connections, he is soon involved with the Soviet advisers. In 1937, under pressure from the Soviet government, Norwegian Foreign Minister Trygve Lie has Trotsky put under house arrest and then deported to Mexico. He is warmly welcomed by Mexican President Lázaro Cárdenas and stays at first with the left-wing painter Diego Rivera. Shortly after his arrival in Mexico, Trotsky founds the Fourth International as a revolutionary and internationalist alternative to the Stalinist Comintern. This act is seen by Stalin as a direct attack, and is probably the moment when he decides that Trotsky must be assassinated. In the NKVD headquarters at the Lubyanka in Moscow, planning begins. During 1937, while Trotsky is stepping up his criticism of Stalin, Mercado is wounded during fighting near Madrid. When he recovers, he's sent in December to Moscow for training as an NKVD hitman. He is given the codename Gnome. To carry out the death sentence passed on Trotsky, Mercado, with his fluent Spanish and French, is selected by the NKVD to infiltrate Trotsky's entourage as a possible assassin. Sylvia Agaloff, a 28-year-old New York Trotskyist who has undertaken courier work for Trotsky, is identified as the way he will get close to his target. In July 1938, Agaloff visits Paris for the formal setting up of the Fourth International. There she is picked up by Mercado, posing as a wealthy young Belgian playboy and journalist, and begins an affair with him. By the end of 1938, the purges halt. Nikolai Yezhov is replaced as head of the NKVD by Lavrenti Beria, and then liquidated. But the hunt for Trotsky goes on, and Beria proves an implacable enemy. The net begins to close when Trotsky's son, Leon Sedov, dies mysteriously in Paris after a routine operation for appendicitis. In 1939, Trotsky quarrels with Rivera and moves into his own house in the Mexico City suburb of Coyoacán. It is guarded by the Mexican police and by supporters, particularly young communist sympathizers from the US. In February 1939, Sylvia Agaloff returns to New York. Ramón Mercado follows her just after World War II breaks out. He is using a false Canadian passport in the name of Frank Jackson. Meanwhile, Trotsky signs a contract with a New York publisher to write a biography of Stalin. In this, he will literally reveal where all the bodies are buried. The plot to assassinate him moves into a higher gear. October the 6th, 1939. Mercado leaves New York and enters Mexico overland at the Laredo border crossing 6 days later. He links up with David Alfaro Siguieros, an arch-Stalinist Mexican painter who is already working with NKVD agents on a plan to kill Trotsky. In January 1940, Sylvia Agaloff joins Mercado in Mexico City. Through her, he begins to visit Trotsky's house frequently, becoming friendly with the guards. While Mercado is infiltrating Trotsky's fortress as Robert Jackson, the NKVD agents decide to try a more direct approach, the assault they have been plotting with David Siguieros. On the night of May the 24th, 1940, they approach the house disguised as police and army and overcome the police guard outside. The door is opened by Robert Sheldon Hart, a young American acting as one of Trotsky's secretaries, possibly deliberately, possibly because he was duped by the uniforms. The assailants riddle Trotsky's bedroom with gunfire, but he and Natalia escape by hiding under their bed. Only his grandson, Esteban, who is sleeping nearby, is grazed on the leg by a bullet. The gunmen escape by stealing two cars. Sheldon Hart goes with them, apparently willingly. The Mexican police, led by the head of the Secret Service, General Sanchez Salazar, at first think that the attack was faked by Trotsky, but they soon realize that it was organized by the NKVD. During the investigation, Salazar raids a deserted farmhouse in the Desert of the Lions, about 12 miles from Mexico City. The body of Sheldon Hart, shot through the head, is found buried. After this, the wall is heightened and watchtowers built around Trotsky's home. Now Mercado, alias Jackson, is told that he is the man who will get through Trotsky's defenses and kill him. June the 12th, New York. Mercado visits the city to be briefed on the assassination. While there, he sees Silvia Agaloff, but leaves on July the 1st, saying that he is going straight back to Mexico City. Mysteriously, he does not contact Silvia again until the end of July, saying that he had been ill in Puebla, a town about 50 miles south of Mexico City. At the beginning of August, Silvia rejoins him in Mexico. They stay at the Hotel Monejo on the Paseo. During the next 3 weeks, Mercado visits Trotsky's house five times. And on August the 8th, he and Silvia have tea with Mr. and Mrs. Trotsky. August the 17th, 1940, Coyoacán. Mercado sees Trotsky to show him an article he has written. They agree to meet again 3 days later to discuss it. The trap is now set. August the 20th, 1940, Coyoacán. Trotsky spends most of the day writing in his study. In the afternoon, after tea, he goes out to feed the hens and rabbits he keeps as pets. At about 5 o'clock, Mercado arrives by car and is let in by the guards. He goes to greet Trotsky. They go into the study so that Trotsky can read the article. As Trotsky sits at this desk with his back to his companion, Mercado pulls out an ice pick and strikes him on the head with it. Although severely wounded, Trotsky screams and leaps to his feet to grapple with Mercado. Mrs. Trotsky and the guards race in. Bleeding severely, Trotsky cries out, "Don't kill him, make him talk." The guards beat Mercado to his knees with their pistol butts and hold him until the police arrive. As well as the ice pick, Mercado is found to have an automatic pistol and a dagger with a 12-inch blade. Meanwhile, Trotsky collapses and is rushed to hospital, bleeding heavily but still breathing. Mercado is also taken to the same hospital and then on to prison. All he says is, "They've got something on me. They're keeping my mother as a prisoner." In the ambulance, he produces an already typed confession. In this, Jackson, as the police are calling him, claims to be Jacques Monard, a Belgian born in Tehran in 1904, the son of a diplomat. At first an enthusiastic Trotskyist, he claims he is so disillusioned by Trotsky's close links with Americans that he decides to kill him. General Salazar soon disproves all this. There is no record of a Jacques Monard. When Sophie Agaloff confronts Mercado, alias Jackson, she denounces him as a Soviet agent. His fake passport is identified as coming from a Canadian who had died fighting on the Republican side in Spain. The curious spelling of his alias, Jackson, without a K, is due to the carelessness of the NKVD forger who doctored it. Trotsky is operated on immediately and seems to be responding well. But the next evening, he relapses into unconsciousness and dies suddenly. His body lies in state for 5 days, during which over 250,000 people file past to pay their respects. Then he is cremated and his ashes interred under this simple memorial in the garden of his home in Coyoacán. After lengthy psychological tests and questioning, Jackson is put on trial and sentenced to 20 years in 1943. He continues to refuse to talk and cannot be broken. But then, in 1950, the mystery begins to unravel. In Madrid, Jackson's fingerprints are matched with those of Ramon Mercado, who had disappeared at the end of the Spanish Civil War. Mercado spends 20 years in prison. Stalin secretly awards him the Order of Lenin. May the 6th, 1960. He is released from prison and goes first to Fidel Castro's Cuba and then on to Czechoslovakia. In 1961, Mercado goes to Moscow. He is declared a hero of the Soviet Union, one of only 21 non-Soviet citizens ever to receive this honor. Mercado dies in Cuba in 1978. To the end, he remains loyal to Stalin, the master for whom he carried out a ruthless crime. Stalin is remembered today as one of the worst mass murderers in history, a monster for whom Trotsky was only one of millions he had slaughtered. But Stalin was right to be frightened of his great opponent. Today, he is reviled, but Trotsky is still revered by many as the man who might have led the Soviet Union into a less dreadful future.